Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Through the narrow lens of the mainstream press in America, the debate over border security and immigration seems very narrow. The complex issue of undocumented workers in America and the dire poverty that sends people across the border is not being covered. U.S. TV viewers are also not shown how much of the problem has to do with failures at a bureaucratic level, where even those immigrants who might be welcomed as workers must often wait many years for processing. Instead, we see what amounts to debates between a so-called pro-security side and a pro-immigrant worker side. Anyone not willing to use code phrases about border security, homeland security, and 9/11 tends to be portrayed as incapable of understanding the problems at our borders or overly sympathetic to the plight of immigrants. Human rights activist and attorney Isabel Garcia will be joining us to talk about some of the politics of the situation and how such limited debate has fed into the longstanding goals of political opportunists on the right and those who would profit from the setting up of tough prison systems at the border. Regardless of what may happen in Congress, where the immigration issue and various laws are being debated, life has recently become far more dangerous for legal immigrants and those who may be waiting for the various kinds of legal status offered under present U.S. law. I asked Isabel Garcia to talk about herself and her work in support of immigrant workers' rights.
I'm co-chair of Derechos Humanos, Human Rights Coalition in Tucson, and actually part of the April 10th and May 1st coalitions. I've been involved in immigrant rights issues for 30 years. There's a lot to talk about those years, but I'm here, daughter of an immigrant, a Mexican undocumented immigrant from my father's side, and I'm fourth generation. My kids are fifth generation from a U.S. citizen. I've been called wetback, everything. And the guys in the city council right now, as I was sitting there, calling me names, telling me I'm the reconquest queen, and then calling me bad words and really trying to incite me. He gets in my face, and that's the climate that we're living. What's not being discussed is the impact of the proposals of President Bush to put National Guard troops at the border. 6,000, that would represent a very, very dangerous precedent for all of us that we should all as Americans be concerned with. The use of military troops, whether state or federal, are really contrary to concepts of good democracies. That's why in this country, with the Posse Comitatus Act, and our tradition has been not to permit armed forces in the enforcement of civilian law. Now, they're couching it and saying these will be support roles. Support roles and training, we saw that with a unit of Marines in the late 1990s where they shot a young U.S. citizen boy, Ezequiel Hernandez. We saw every possible rule of engagement really violated. And in spite of the millions that we have spent to train these individuals to kill the right people, they killed the wrong person. Now, that situation can repeat itself many times over in such a politically charged atmosphere, and the public is not looking at the issue of real security. If they want real border security, they should ask us, the communities, because we have spent $30 billion on border security, and this is what's resulted. Over 5,000 deaths along the border since 1994 that we know of, because we know there's a lot of people who have died and not been found. That is a huge human rights crisis that the U.S. public is not looking at. People did not die before 1994. Secondly, we are not looking at the division and the chaos that's being caused in these communities. We've seen the growth of the vigilantes. I've had threats myself. We've got Minutemen running around here, hate groups, as a result of this border policy of 1994 that funnels 52% of all migrant crossings through the state of Arizona. These border security reforms or measures, $30 billion worth, have not reimbursed local communities for medical services that have been required. It has not, they've not been reimbursed for social and other infrastructure that has been damaged. We have not given any money whatsoever to the ranchers and other private property owners that they all utilize and bring out to make the point, and yet they are so hypocritical. They've not paid a cent for the repair of any fences. And anything like that. We call on ranchers and private property owners to join with us in a call to ending this kind of border strategy that puts people through their property. They didn't before 1994.
Isabel Garcia, we're reaching you as you and other activists and area residents wait to meet with officials about the way some people have reacted to your activism. Talk about the threats against you that you've mentioned and fill us in about what else is going on in Tucson, Arizona.
Part of the chilling of our community sometimes and unfortunately comes from police departments. In the city of Tucson on April the 10th of this year, we're sad to say that the Tucson Police Department marred our message and chilled our community in coming out in such a massive way. In the midst of 15,000 people in a park that we had rented or leased, they permitted a very unstable, dangerous racist to come in the middle of our march the entire time and burn flags, threaten people. The attitude of some of the police was very in favor of his political position against ours. We had eventually police arrest, not of this dangerous guy who committed a crime, but arrest of six of our community. He was given a citation the following day for one of the crimes he had committed. So this individual has continued to ratchet it up, and we're at the city council meeting right now asking the city council as a whole to conduct an independent investigation because their internal review was just a whitewash of what happened. And we are showing the city of Tucson that we're talking about public safety of the community that we deserve, including myself. I have been threatened by one of these, and the Tucson Police Department has yet to act on this threat. And so we believe that it's government officials that have permitted them, from the Congress down to police departments. We think our taxpayer-funded agencies and officials need to assure our political participation rather than encouraging those who want to minimize our political participation.
Now, what did this man say? You said he threatened people. He threatened you. What exactly did he say, and how did he say it?
Well, he says many things, but what I'm concerned with is a written missive that he wrote on the email, a letter to me. The subject line says, "Warden to Isabel Garcia, I'm going to blow your freaking head off." And then he writes a letter to me and two other public defenders accusing us of all kinds of things, that we're smuggling aliens, that we're bringing the country to a brink of civil war. And he makes a lot of allegations. And at the end, he says, if any of you, or your, he uses a bad word in Spanish, attack me, threaten me, invade my perimeter, etc., I will not hesitate to blow your freaking head off. The police department now says that last line is conditional and therefore not an actionable threat. And I feel, as a reasonable person, it's a reasonable person standard, I feel threatened with that letter. But again, it's this climate with our governmental officials acting, especially the Congress, who passed 4437, that has given license to all these guys to act out their hate and their anger. The public is not aware that we have already criminalized the hundreds of thousands of immigrants. H.R. 4437 now wants to make everybody a felon, but what we're not realizing is that part of that $30 billion has been to prosecute people who have answered our calls for their work, for their labor. We all want to say they violated the law and they didn't do it by the rules. Well, I beg people to study history and to look at the history of our immigration laws and see if they don't find the connection that every time that economic interests require the use of undocumented, unauthorized labor force, the United States government has been there to permit that. it's the, you know, best kept secret that we have wanted, in a way, an open border with Mexico, because we've required it. We've actually required it.
Let me just ask you to describe the bill that you just mentioned and tell listeners what that is exactly.
Right now I'm talking about 4437, which is known as the Sensenbrenner bill that was passed by the Congress. That bill provides for a construction of a 700-mile wall. Make no mistake, it's not a fence, it's a wall. It's a militaristic steel wall with barbed wires and all. That's what we live with. It would create felons out of anybody who is here that's unauthorized. Not just the people that cross through it other than the port of entry, which is a misdemeanor, a federal offense, because a lot of people come across with valid permits and overstay their visa. Well, Sensenbrenner's bill would make everybody a felony. It would make a felony out of any one of us, social service agencies or individuals who provide help to the undocumented. It would provide for absolutely no legalization. It just represents the very worst of us, I believe. And now, with the mobilizations of millions of people in a very mature, historic act of civic participation through the marches from March through May, that mobilization is now being utilized by those in Congress to reach what they claim a compromise bill for a reform that has nothing to do with the word comprehensive. They're all tossing a word, comprehensive immigration reform, as if their proposals were comprehensive. They're not comprehensive, because whether you look at Bush's proposal or you look at the Hagel-Martinez proposal, it includes heavy, heavy militarization of the border, huge enforcement of the border without giving regard to real border security or national security. It refuses to really provide a meaningful path for legalization. The Hagel-Martinez bill would result in the division of our families. Our communities and individual families will be divided into three. Those that are here 5 years and more, 5 years to 2 years, and then those two and less are totally out of luck. That division exists in one family. And, of course, it exists through our communities. They're not telling us all of the obstacles that are going to be put forward, even for those that are here for 5 years. They're not being told what's going to exclude them. Those that have been here between 5 and 2 years are being asked to go back to the border and ask permission, and that they're going to do it like a nod and wink and let you go by. I don't think so. And Bush is talking about guest worker program, where we bring people in like they were machines and provide a service for us, and it's a limited time. And if you want to apply for any immigration benefit, then you would have to qualify, number one, under the existing laws, and number two, he said very clearly, you would have to go to the back of the line. All of these are measures that are really not going to provide any solution to the immigration phenomenon, and certainly not to the horrific human rights crisis that we live here at the border in Arizona, Sonora.
We're talking with attorney Isabel Garcia of the Derechos Humanos Human Rights Coalition in Tucson, Arizona. A lack of broad press coverage has generally left Garcia and others like her more vulnerable at the border than ever in places like Maricopa County, where hardline Republican Sheriff Joe Arpaio has moved into position to capitalize on the debate going on in Congress. The reforms Isabel Garcia mentioned, which funneled a majority of immigrants crossing into the U.S. through Arizona, puts the ultra-conservative Sheriff Arpaio and his growing posse in line for the lead role of Border Patrol, where the use of U.S. troops or the National Guard remains controversial. Arpaio could wind up taking up the slack as Congress and the White House hesitate. If so, Arpaio will be in a position to continue a privatization plan he and former Arizona prison chief Terry Stewart set up with support from the Bush administration and lots of attention from the media. Sheriff Arpaio has been catering to the business side of the prison industry, purchasing new products designed for Homeland Security and law enforcement, including new kinds of taser weapons and restraint chairs. His tactics are referred to as merely controversial by the mainstream press, yet they have resulted in the deaths of inmates, and Sheriff Arpaio refuses to change tactics. Here is a clip of a BBC special by Channel 4 TV reporter Deborah Davis called Torture, Inc., America's Brutal Prisons. She showed a very different side of Sheriff Arpaio in her program about the profit-motivated prison systems in America, where inmates are tasered for punishment, restrained in specially designed chairs with hoods over their heads, pepper sprayed, and sometimes die. Here, Davis is talking with Sheriff Arpaio about several cases of abuse that have resulted in death and lawsuits.
I'm not going to argue this case. It's over. But let me say this. If I did anything wrong in my officers, I would have been hung. They checked everything out. My officers were clear. There was no problems with that case. So I think that tells you the bottom line.
If there'd been no problems, they wouldn't have paid out $8.25 million to settle it, would they?
That was the insurance firm. They were afraid to go before a jury.
The sheriff's promise to make prison as grim as possible hasn't deterred the criminals. He put up Tent City as a cheap way of housing the rising numbers. The inmate population has doubled during his 12 years in office.
You'd rather be in a Mexican prison?
Absolutely.
That's the worst prison jail in the world. You'd rather be there?
I'd rather be there than here.
We treat you worse than the Mexicans in Mexico?
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Okay.
The sheriff enjoys hearing inmates complain about conditions. He's less happy when it comes to allegations of brutality. Brian Crenshaw was registered blind. 2 years ago, he was serving 6 months because of a shoplifting offence.
There was a message on the answer machine from the hospital stating that Brian was there and in very critical condition. I called and I talked to the doctor. And he told me it was a matter of life and death. He said that he had a perforated intestines, broken neck.
Brian's mother discovered he'd been in a scuffle with officers at Tent City. He was then transferred to Madison Street Jail and held in solitary confinement. Six days later, the cameras show Brian Crenshaw taken to hospital after he was found unconscious in his cell. But he'd already told a prison doctor he'd been kicked and punched by officers at Tent City.
They murdered my son, Mr. Arpaio. Is responsible. He is the head of this sheriff's department. And yet, he seems to thrive on this cruelty and this mentality that these men are nothing.
She smuggled a camera into the hospital. After a month in a coma, Brian Crenshaw died from septicemia. The family is suing. The sheriff insists this was a self-inflicted accident.
You say that he fell off a bunk. But the medical evidence says that's not consistent with his injuries.
Well, we'll see what the medical record shows.
So you still stick by the fact you say he fell off the bunk?
Yes, 100%. We have videos to show that. I'm not going to get into the details of these cases that are pending.
But he told one of your own doctors that he had been severely beaten by prison officers.
Well, a lot of people in jail say certain comments that are not true. So if you want to believe a few of these inmates to have their own agenda and so on, so be it.
There's now a group, Mothers Against Arpaio, united by their horror stories.
In addition to the Channel 4 report by Deborah Davis of the BBC, there have been some highly damaging reports in the Phoenix New Press and a series of segments on Democracy Now! About prison abuse in Arpaio's Arizona system. A December 28th story by Anna Bommersbach was featured in Phoenix Magazine under the title, Will Sheriff Joe Stop at Nothing? MSNBC also reported on this latest outrage last week. There is no doubt that Sheriff Joe Arpaio's office set up an inmate in jail in a bizarre scheme to convince the inmate to threaten Sheriff Arpaio's life. A sheriff office informant is heard on tape coercing and bullying an inmate into threatening the life of the sheriff. the inmate, Jimmy Seville, was arrested at a staged scene as waiting TV crews got the story. Jimmy Seville was later acquitted when the jury learned how the idea of targeting Arpaio in the first place was hatched in the sheriff's own office. Despite the steady stream of damaging stories, Sheriff Arpaio continues to pose before the U.S. media as if nothing were going wrong. In fact, CNN's Lou Dobbs had him on in a May 4th segment about Arpaio's latest interpretation of a law set up to prosecute those who traffic in human beings at the border. Arpaio was described as a maverick by CNN. They said he believes Arizona's new anti-smuggling law applies not just to coyotes, but to the illegal aliens they transport. According to CNN, some 120 illegal immigrants have been jailed in this way. CNN's Lou Dobbs called Sheriff Arpaio an innovator, setting a model for others to consider. There will be a legal review of Arpaio's interpretation of the law on May 23rd. I asked Isabel Garcia to consider what would happen if the sheriff's posse were to become a larger part of the effort to control illegal immigrants at the U.S. border in Arizona.
It's extremely dangerous. All of these steps that we're seeing are extremely dangerous. We have to ask ourselves, why are we reacting to other human beings, to workers, in such a fashion that we're allowing vigilantism? Everybody talks about the rule of law and that immigrants don't follow the rule of law, and yet we're authorizing unqualified, untrained people with unstable backgrounds, racist views, to join posses to hunt human beings. Whether it's the troops or whether it's posses, it's a horrible mistake. Whether we decide to put another, 14,000 agents, Border Patrol trained agents supposedly, that's a huge mistake. We have to ask ourselves, why are we spending billions and billions of dollars without asking for any accountability? Where is the accountability for the $30 billion that have been spent thus far on this border? Have we decreased immigration? Absolutely not. But have we caused mass destruction to the environment that I didn't even touch upon here in Arizona? The fact that these individuals put somebody with the kind of background that Sheriff Arpaio has is very irresponsible. And we know some of the atrocities that he has committed in the state. And now we see him arresting people, even though the needs are great in the city of Phoenix, in Maricopa, the city is strapped. Even in the criminal justice system, police officers say that they need their services to be used to investigate real crime. And now they're being diverted. All of the system is being diverted to spend resources, precious resources, on people already suffering. We're seeing this in so many ways. The Border Patrol ran down a 12-year-old girl in the desert in an SUV, chasing them, her and her father, killing her, seriously injuring him. And then we have a state system that charged the father with endangerment because he put his daughter out there in the desert, even though they're trying to get back home where he lives with his wife in Oxnard, California, with his other daughter, 18 months, and they're gainfully employed. Here in Tucson, Arizona, we have horrific deaths in the summers. We have a movement called No More Deaths, where we take community out to try to save people that are dying in the desert. We have two young people, Shanti and Daniel. They're now charged in federal court as smugglers because they were taking three individuals that exhibited some very serious signs after a training protocol that we follow in order to do medical evacuations. And now we're seeing immigrants being charged with their own smuggling. I think this is outrageous and unconscionable what's going on here in the state of Arizona, and the hope is to replicate just as they did with 150 Minutemen that were out here. They were given all of the media space available so that they could replicate and duplicate everywhere across this country. That's exactly what they're doing with Sheriff Arpaio and Andrew Thomas here in Phoenix. Can you imagine this unprecedented activity of hunting us down, of hunting all of our communities down. In other words, racial profiling is not only okay with law enforcement, it's definitely okay with Border Patrol, but now we're going to extend it out to not highly trained. We know that a lot of these people have no training, and then others that have been in the military that are trained. But trained for what is the issue, right? We're talking about an incredibly dangerous situation for all of our communities, and really, is it really targeted at the undocumented? Is that really their target? Or are we all their targets? Because here in Arizona, for the first time, and today was the vote, the first time ever in any state, we're asked for identification and to prove that we're a U.S. citizen, in spite of the fact that citizens don't vote. They couldn't produce any evidence of voting. So what does that tell you? That tells you that they don't want me to vote. They don't want my mom's my friends to vote. In other words, it's really not the unlawful migration, even though they claim we don't have any problem with legal immigration. That's not true. When you scratch the surface at any one of these guys, they attack us virulently, whether we've been here five generations like I have through my mother's side or whether we just arrived. We have to question ourselves, are they really, really concerned about the unlawful migration, or are they concerned about the rise in the Latino population across this country?
Now, you're saying that this could actually discourage Latino voters across the country in a way to make them feel worried about how they might be received by officials of the U.S. government, how they might be received as voters. Will they be asked questions? What would happen at the polling booth if they don't have the right documentation?
Absolutely. All of these measures are to chill our political participation. And right now they're frightened because in spite of the much media that they received for 150 of them here last year, they have seen millions of us march, articulate what we need in a very peaceful and responsible fashion. And I think this has really bothered them that within the marches are not only undocumented immigrants that have come out and said this is enough. We contribute to this country. We should be treated with respect. But half of the participants were the rest of us, our communities of all nationalities who are standing up and saying, we stand with the immigrants. And they see that many of them are people of color that have been here, that are voters and such. They want to chill our ability to vote in the state of Arizona. That's definitely their purpose, because that's why they passed Prop 200. They knew they had absolutely no evidence that immigrants were voting.
Do you think that this election season, immigrant populations are going to become the deciding factor? And if so, how will that affect the people that you care so much about?
We're hoping that people register to vote and come out to vote, but more importantly, immerse themselves in the issues. We have families that are mixed, families that have people that have no lawful authority, to U.S. citizens, to people who've been immigrated, to sons or daughters that are forever barred from the country because they had a marijuana possession in their life. We have the entire gamut of mixed families, but included there are U.S. citizens. Because, yes, immigrants can't vote, even if you've been lawful permanent resident for 30 years. Unless you become a citizen, you cannot vote. And our families all have U.S. citizens. We have friends that are U.S. citizens, and we must mobilize that and harness that political power. But not only through the ballot box, but through our voter engagement, through the marches, through forums and educational activities. Because without political education, it really does us no good for somebody to just vote. Right now, we need to harness that, because the people that demonstrated all over this country the past few months, I believe, do have that political education.
Isabel Garcia, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Attorney Isabel Garcia of the Derechos Hermanos Human Rights Coalition in Tucson, Arizona. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion. Our music is by Fritz Heed, fritzheed.com.